inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for joining me today. Looking forward to the program with you. And of course, I want to invite you to call in. If you'd like to join the program, you can call in to 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. We've, of course, got some special elections today that everybody's talking about. A lot of focus on this Wisconsin Supreme Court race and then some congressional races to replace a couple of folks that have been appointed by Donald Trump to serve in his administration. So we'll definitely talk about some of those races. And then, of course, you got all these judges that are blocking Donald Trump every step of the way, doing their best to continue their lawfare. Because, of course, an unelected, unaccountable judge at the lowest level of the federal judiciary surely knows better than the president of the United States, who was elected by, you know, only millions and millions of people. And, you know, why in the world would we not want the weakest of the three branches, the judiciary, and the weakest of that entire branch, the lowest level district judge, why would we not want them to make policy for the whole country? Can't imagine where that could go wrong. Can't imagine how that could possibly conflict with the vision of the Founding Fathers and, of course, the actual text of the Constitution. So I'm sure you can read through my dripping sarcasm. We will definitely be talking about that one. And as always, when we talk about an issue like that, it's a great time to mention biblical citizenship in modern America. Make sure you take that class, okay? It's free, doesn't cost you anything, and you will learn a biblical perspective on how to be a good citizen, how to treat your neighbor well, how to form a society in a way that will work, and then how to do that in the United States of America, which means you got to understand the United States Constitution, which clearly most of the country does not. But there's a new interest in that, and that's why Patriot Academy and Wall Builders and American Family Association and all these organizations have had this emphasis on restoring the foundations of the country, because you can't be a great nation if you don't know what made you great in the first place. You can't restore greatness. You can't make America great again if you don't know what made us great in the first place. And that means just simply studying our history, studying our founding documents, and once again, reminding yourself what the formula is that makes our nation so great. So you got to do spring training, folks. I know I'm a baseball guy, so, you know, spring training, you got to, every, no matter how good of a player you are, you go to spring training every year. You get back to the basics. You study the basics that made you a good ball player in the first place. And as citizens, we need to be doing the same thing. So patriotacademy.com if you want to get the biblical citizenship class. And again, you can take the class for free. Join me on a national class, or you can start a local class right there in your home or at your church. Got thousands and thousands of classes all over the nation taking place. Okay, before we get to the judges, let's talk about these races. There's, of course, the Supreme Court race in Wisconsin. I say of course because I have never, ever seen this much focus on a state Supreme Court election. Now, just to avoid confusion out there, okay, you have a United States federal Supreme Court. Okay, that's the highest court in the land. We always hear that, right? It's not highest court meaning the final say. That's the state legislatures, that have the final say on what happens in America, because they have the final say on constitutional amendments, and we are a constitutional republic, and therefore the Constitution itself is the supreme law of the land. And even that heralded United States Supreme Court is supposed to follow the Constitution. Anyway, you've got a U.S. Supreme Court, and then each state has a state Supreme Court, and I don't know the exact number. I think it's roughly half and half. State Supreme Court, you know, state judges are elected, and then half the states have state judges that are appointed. Roughly that. Texas, where I live, is a elected judiciary. Therefore, we elect our local district judges, we elect our county court at law judges, we elect our appellate judges, and we elect our state Supreme Court justices. We have nine of them in Texas. I've actually run for that office twice. I ran the first time in 2010, barely lost. I won the primary. I got first out of six candidates running. The other five were all judges and appellate judges, and I was the only non-judge running. So the big law firm cabal hated the idea of me being on the U.S. or on the state Supreme Court because they couldn't control me. I wasn't from their little club. Anyway, but I won the primary out of six. I just didn't get a majority. So of the vote out of with six candidates on the ballot. But, you know, way out outpaced everybody else, but didn't get to 50. So we had to have a runoff. And, man, in that runoff, boy, you talk about the whole legal community teaming up. Yeah, it was nasty. But still, barely lost that runoff, but I did. And so didn't make it to the Texas Supreme Court. Thank the good Lord. You know, he had a much better plan for me. I would be bored to tears right now, sitting in an office reading briefs all day. How boring would that be? But I was foolish enough to do it again in 2016. Actually, I got drafted both times. I didn't really want to do it either time, but I got drafted. And in 2016, again, barely lost. That one was not a runoff. It was just two of us in the race and came down to the wire very, very, very close. I think it was, you know, 49 point something to 50 point something. Anyway, So I know this state Supreme Court thing pretty well from the standpoint of having run twice and, you know, been very involved in helping to get other people elected. Wisconsin's state Supreme Court is also elected. And the reason everybody is so focused on this is because the Wisconsin Supreme Court is split down the middle. And this race is going to determine whether it's going to be controlled by a bunch of left-wing judicial activists that are going to continue to try to stop everything Donald Trump does. They're going to continue to overrule anything the legislature does there. They're trying to undo and have done, and to some extent undone, a lot of what Scott Walker did years ago. You might remember the really nasty campaigns legislative battles in Wisconsin over essentially breaking the government unions who were, you know, the teacher unions, the government unions. They were, I mean, literally shutting the state down with absurd demands and all of these things. Anyway, Scott Walker came in and reformed all of that. It really helped save Wisconsin. And now the left is trying to undo a lot of that. They're also, you know, against just about anything that any MAGA person would be for. So the other reason this is a big deal is because you might remember in 2020 when you had all the election disputes across the country, the state Supreme Courts in most of those states where it really mattered, they stopped any potential actual trial from investigating what really happened in the election of 2020. They also not only allowed for but participated in a lot of the unconstitutional election racketeering, where they changed election law without the legislature. That is unconstitutional. That is against the law, but we never got a trial on it. And so that was happening in Pennsylvania. I mean, the Supreme Court there, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court actually participated in the rewriting of the election laws. Some of these other state Supreme Courts, they just refused to hear challenges to this being done. So I'm just throwing all that out there at you so you know. These state Supreme Court races are important. Now, typically, none of us know anything about the candidates for judicial office. It's typically very hard to find out if a judicial candidate is conservative or liberal. Are they going to be a judicial activist, or are they going to only apply the law like they're supposed to? And it's very hard to find those things out. And what a lot of these judicial candidates will do, they'll hide behind this quote-unquote judicial canon of ethics. Now, that whole thing is ridiculous. The judicial, it sounds beautiful, right? The canon of ethics. Oh, we're going to have these ethical judges who do nothing but rule from a neutral perspective, and they're not going to have any convictions one way or the other. They're not going to have any beliefs themselves. They're only going to somehow be neutral based on the case. But does anybody believe that? Surely you don't buy this. Every judicial candidate, every judge has some sort of foundational belief system. I would hope so. I hope they're not just a robot. They all do. And the problem is they've learned to use this language, the judicial canon of ethics, and I'm a neutral observer and all of this baloney. And then they get in there, and then their left-wing bias takes over. What we should be able to do is question these judges. If we're going to be able to cast a vote for them, and if they're going to actually do their office well, we need to know what they believe. We need to know, are they a believer in judicial supremacy, that they should be able to overrule the actions of the legislature or the president or the governor or whatever it might be? Do we get to find out, are they a believer in biblical justice or social justice? Do they believe in this racist social justice that's taken a hold in the country? Or do they believe in biblical justice that says neither Jew nor Greek, neither rich nor poor, we're going to treat everybody the same. Everybody will be treated equally in our courts. Do they believe in these things? We should be able to know that when someone runs for a judicial office. Well, thankfully, there's a case, I want to say it was, it was like the 80s maybe even in the 90s. It was called, actually, I take that back. It might have been as early as, as recent as 2000, 2001. Anyway, it was the decision was written by Scalia. It was called Minnesota v. White, and it specifically said, if you're going to have elections for judges in your state, absolutely the judge should be able to tell you what their position is on things. And absolutely the voter deserves to know so that they can cast an informed vote. So these judges that hide behind the judicial canon of ethics, I can't answer any questions about anything, they're lying. Or they just simply do not know about Minnesota v. White, Supreme Court decision. Or they've bought into the whole cabal thing. I got to hide everything I believe so that I can get on the court. So anyway, it's typically very hard to find out where a judge stands or even to just get familiar with judicial candidates. Now, most states that have judicial elections also have some organizations that will give you a voter's guide, so they'll go study these candidates. But even then, it's hard on the judicial side. Not so in the Wisconsin election today. The Wisconsin election today, it is very clear who the good guys and the bad guys are. All right. There is no question about who people that care about the Constitution and care about the country and support. If you're a MAGA person supporting the Trump agenda to restore the Constitution and all of these things, then you do not want to vote for the Democrat-backed Susan Crawford. If you want to support a MAGA agenda, if you want to support not judicial supremacy, but constitutional supremacy, if you want to restore biblical justice, not social justice, all of those things, then Brad Schimel is the guy that you want to be backing. Okay, so this guy's running against Susan Crawford. That's the race. It's Brad versus Susan. And Charlie Kirk and Donald Trump Jr. and Elon Musk and all the usual, MAGA-type folks, they're out there campaigning for this Brad Schimel. And then, of course, all the left-wingers are campaigning for Susan Crawford. I mean, I've never seen this kind of attention to a judicial race, but it's a big deal. Everybody sees this as a big, big test of whether or not the appetite in the country is beyond just the really red areas, but possibly a purple area like Wisconsin could go the right way. Now, the headwinds are obviously against the Republican and for the Democrat because of just Wisconsin politics, okay? It's a 4-3 majority currently on the court by liberals. So if Schimel wins today, and going into today, he was behind by like a point and a half. But if he wins, and there's a huge effort, and people from all over the country are making phone calls into Wisconsin, encouraging people in Wisconsin to vote, letter writing campaigns, all of that, to try to win this race. And it's crazy how much money has been spent. I mean, I'm talking like $80 to $100 million. Maybe on both sides, I may have that wrong. It may be total. But it's a ton of money for a Supreme Court race. And my Supreme Court races, we spent like, I don't know, $100,000, $200,000. It was not much. Now, the other side spent $1 million or more, a couple of million dollars, but nothing like what this race is. So that's a big one to watch. When we come back from the break, we'll talk about those congressional races because there's several of those in Florida. I don't think these are as up for grabs as everybody else. I mean, both of these districts were 60 or 70% districts in the last race. But special elections are different, I will say. Special elections, it's going to be the hard core. It's whoever shows up that it could go the other way. I don't think that's going to happen. But that's what everybody's a little bit worried about for these returns in Florida tonight. So anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about those races. We'll talk about these judicial supremacy, from judicial supremacy from the district court level, and we'll dive down a little further into that one. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment.
Share-a-thon is a special time to me for reasons beyond funding our ministry. During Share-a-thon, I'm reminded of the vital partnerships we have with listeners around the country. It's encouraging to hear the stories and have so many calls from people who have recognized what a blessing it is to be able to share a Christian perspective and the Word on AFR. God has blessed us with this platform, and we get to use it for the cause of Christ.
Spring Share-a-thon is coming April 8th through 10th, and it's your chance to renew your partnership with American Family Radio.
We deliberately don't receive any government support, so our listeners are essential to the funding and continued operations of this ministry. And in addition to operational capital, Share-a-thon renews the spirits of those of us who work here.
Join us April 8th through 10th for Spring Share-a-thon on American Family Radio. This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for staying with me today. Let's jump right back in. So we were talking about the Supreme Court race in Wisconsin. I have not yet talked about the Florida races for Congress, so we'll cover those as well. But one more thing on the Wisconsin race. The part of the reason that Elon and all these folks are going in, they're concerned, as you recall, in Congress, it's a very, very tight majority for Republicans. I mean, technically one vote, depending on who's there, two or three votes, but and then depending on these vacancies, what happens, it could expand it to 3 to 5 votes. But my point is that it's very, very close. And so what some are saying is that if this court, if the liberal wins this seat on the court, that there's a high chance, high probability that they will revisit the congressional lines, the map for the congressional lines in Wisconsin fairly soon, which could affect the 2026 election, which could affect the majority going into the second half of Donald Trump's term. So if you followed all that, what I'm saying is, let me back up. So congressional lines are typically only drawn once every 10 years, but they almost always get challenged in a dozen or more states. And they challenge them over crazy things sometimes. Everybody gerrymanders. Okay, there is no congressional lines ever that have not been gerrymandered. Gerrymandering goes back to, yeah, you guessed it, Elbridge Gerry. Because his district, there was a district, I think he was governor at the time, I can't remember, but anyway, there was a lines that were drawn that looked like a salamander, and so they called it gerrymandering, and that was Elbridge Gerry, who signed the Declaration of Independence, so, you know, long time ago, all right? My point is, it's politics, okay? Everybody's going to fight to draw the lines where it favors their party. Now, how do you do that? Well, because wherever you draw the lines, you can pack in. Think about it this way. If you draw the lines where you pack in all the Democrats into these 80% Democrat districts, but you spread the Republicans out to where they're all like 60% Republican districts, then you're going to get more Republican districts than you would if every district was 50-50. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but bottom line is you can draw the lines to have more Republicans or more Democrats in a state, depending on where you draw the lines. And so that's why whoever has that pen has a lot of power. Now, the courts should never draw the lines. It's absurd that we allow federal judges to draw lines. We allow state Supreme Courts to draw lines. The legislative body should be drawing those lines, okay? And I know people have tried to have these commissions that are supposedly not going to be political. That's never going to happen. Those commissions are going to be political because who's going to appoint those commissioners? They're going to be appointed by a governor or by a Speaker of the House or a mix of – it's always going to be political, okay? So you should have legislators draw the lines because they are the most – responsive to the people, state legislators. They're the easiest to get to. I'm not saying they're easy to get to, but they're the quickest in terms of an election. So you can have a quick election, most state houses every 2 years. That's the smallest districts compared to congressional or whatever. So it's just the closest to the people. So that's always best. All right. So all of that to say, there's been challenges in Wisconsin over the state legislative lines. Those were redrawn by the state Supreme Court just last year. And then on the congressional lines, they haven't been redrawn by the court yet, but there's been challenges about whether or not they would be. They've been drawn by the Democrat governor there so far and the Republican House. So at least you had some sort of compromise on what those lines would look like. All right, all of that to say that's the background on part of why so much is at stake in this state Supreme Court race. Doesn't mean for sure that if the left-leaning candidate wins that they will redraw the lines, but everybody's concerned that that will be one of the many bad things this court will do if the left controls the court. So anyway, watch for that one tonight. We'll see. Those polls are closing here in about 5.5, 6 hours, whatever, maybe 6 hours. And we'll start to get some exit polling and see what that looks like. It was neck and neck as of yesterday as of the last polling that was done. And so that's why there's so much effort going in there. Okay, the congressional races. So there's two in Florida to watch. The Matt Gaetz's seat is because he had resigned for the attorney general position from Donald Trump and then had to withdraw his nomination when that got squirrely. And so now he's doing a show. So sounds familiar. Matt, been there, done that, brother. He was actually a state rep. It was after the time that I was a state rep, but he started there before he went to Congress. So his congressional seat is up for grabs. I say it's up for grabs. It's really not up for grabs. I was just looking at this. So let's look at the results. Last time Matt ran in 2024, 66%. Okay, now you can say, yeah, but that he's, you know, popular name. He's been incumbent for a while, so bigger than normal. But that's a lot. I mean, it was 66 to 34. And apparently that opponent of his, the Democrat opponent, let me make sure I've got this right. I believe the Democrat opponent that he is running against is running in the open seat is also the lady that he beat. So let me do, here's Epic Times. Epic Times says Matt Gaetz and Michael Waltz. Those are the two their seats are open. Okay, so on the Gaetz seat, yes, it is. Okay, so Padronis is the Republican nominee for this open seat, and Gay Valamont is the Democrat. Now, she was defeated by Gaetz 66 to 34 in 2024. Okay, in 2022, Gaetz won with 67.9%. So it's a special. Anything can happen in a special election. Okay, that's why some people are a little bit nervous about this. So definitely pray for it. And if you're in Florida, if you're in that district, absolutely go vote. I mean, I'm not discouraging anybody at all, or I don't want to give you a false sense of security. Upsets happen in special elections for that very reason, because people stay home. And in specials, you know, it's typically the hardcore, only the hardcore that show up. The other Florida race is Michael Waltz's, the seat that he vacated. And he won in 2024 about the same, 66.5% to 33.5%. And then in 2022, he won with 75%. So, I mean, both of these districts, no doubt, Republican districts. But again, anything could happen. So very important for people to turn out there. If they were to lose those seats, we wouldn't lose the majority, but it would mean literally a one vote majority. Instead of, if we win those seats, we stretch it to, you know, 3 or 4 vote majority instead of just one. Now, the other one that was going to happen was the New York race with Elise Stefanik, and she had been nominated by President Trump to serve as the Secretary of the UN. The Ambassador to the UN. Withdrew her nomination. So I don't know if there was something behind the scenes more than this, but the public line on this was it's just too close. If we were to lose all three of those seats on a really bad special election day, then we'd really be in trouble. So let's not risk it. And so that's the reason that that she withdrew her nomination. So I don't believe there's an election for that seat. I think unless she's still in it, and but I don't think so. I think she will now finish out the term she was already elected to. That's my understanding of it. Could be wrong on that. All right. So those are the big ones to watch for. There's a lot of interest in the more interest in the Wisconsin Supreme Court race than the congressional races, believe it or not, based on what I'm hearing. All right, let's jump over before we run out of time to these judicial judicial tyranny examples. That's the only way I know to look at it. I mean, as I was saying earlier, I mean, just think about it. You've got the lowest level of the federal judiciary here. This is one district judge that is essentially overruling the president of the United States. Now, who elects the president? The whole country. All right. So this is the Electoral College. Not only does every state get representation in the Electoral College, even the District of Columbia gets a representation, and they're not a state. So they get three electoral votes. So there's no question that the president is the president of the whole nation. And yet, we're going to allow a single district federal judge to say no to President Trump. Now, what are they saying no to? Well, the one that most, you know, off the top of my head that bothers me the most probably is the idea that the president of the United States cannot remove illegal aliens that are rapists and murderers and all kinds of other thuggery. And so here he is flying out these thugs, sending them back to either the places, the countries they came from, where they emptied prisons to let these people come into our nation because Joe Biden invited them in and the horrible Biden administration allowed millions and millions of these people to come here. So President Trump is sending them back. And what does this district judge say? No, you're not going to allow the president to get rid of these thugs out of our country. And I'm not exaggerating when I say thugs. These are literally rapists and murderers and thieves. They have criminal records back home. They've been at least accused, if not convicted, of horrible crimes here in the United States. And President Trump says enough is enough. The American people say enough is enough. It's the main reason President Trump was elected. And so he's sending them back to their countries, and this district judge says no. Now, I think it's the perfect time for the president of the United States to say, in Andrew Jackson's voice, nice opinion, let me see you enforce it. In other words, you're the weakest of the three branches. You're the judicial branch. Even if the Supreme Court said this, I think the president would have authority in this case to say, no, that's your opinion. I appreciate your opinion. I'll review your opinion. But I'm the president of the United States. I am the chief executive officer. I am the commander in chief. I am commanded under the Constitution, under Article 2, to do this. The Border Patrol is under my authority as the executive branch. If you want to change their authority, you can do that with a congressional act, and you've got to, I have the choice of possibly vetoing that. So I'm the one that has authority here. And by the way, the Congress gave me additional specific authority to get rid of these bad actors that are a threat to our nation. The Alien Enemies Act from 1798 specifically gives the president authority here and specifically removes judicial review. It's called positive exception. It's something in Article 3 of the Constitution that the Congress has the power to do. The Congress gets to set the authority for the courts. And the Congress said, in this case, courts, no power. You don't get any say. We want the president to be able to unilaterally remove these bad actors and get them out of our country. And that's what President Trump was doing. And yet you get this I think, out of control district judge. This is the James Boasberg guy that now has drawn like four cases to be able to overrule President Trump. So I don't know what's going on there, but it seems hanky to me. Anyway, so this guy definitely, he needs to be impeached for this because this is going outside of his judicial authority. This is absolutely unconstitutional for him to try to stop President Trump from doing this, and he should be impeached, and Chief Justice John Roberts is wrong to say that impeachment is not the right remedy here. And we've already covered that on the program, but just as a quick repeat, there were a lot of people, including President Trump, calling for the impeachment of this Justice Boasberg, and Justice John Roberts, in this weird public statement, comes out and rebukes President Trump, rebukes everybody else that said impeachment, and says, no, impeachment is not the right move here. Judicial review is the only way. And in fact, I'm trying to remember exactly how he said it. Basically, he said that same phrase that he used in the Obamacare case. It's well established that judicial review is the right remedy. Well established? By whom? By him. By John Roberts, by the courts. They don't get to establish this stuff. That's what the Constitution is for. And the Constitution does not give the courts authority to overrule the president on this. And the Constitution gives Congress the authority to give the president the authority to not be reviewed by the courts in this case. So Justice John Roberts, you're wrong. Impeachment is the proper remedy here. As Alexander Hamilton said, it's a bridle in the hands of the legislature. So that's one of the judges that's doing this. And then you got, you got this Theodore Chong from Maryland that's blocking immigration raids from taking place. You got this Gia Cobb that's halting the Justice Department from releasing these FBI agents. And then there's so many of these. I was trying to read through all of the list of judges. Judge Furman is halting the deportation of that Columbia student, Khalil, who was arrested for his role in the pro-Palestinian protest. I know that one's debated even on the right now, that he should have the right to do all of this stuff. I tend to agree with Marco Rubio, where if we're granting someone, we're inviting them into our nation, we're giving them a special status to be in our nation, if they're going to go out and do this kind of stuff, we have every right to revoke that. This is not a U.S. citizen that is doing that. The free speech rights and all of that, that's for our U.S. citizens. There's this judge in Boston, Judge Kelly, that is blocking efforts to cut $4 billion from research grants in 22 states. I mean, the president is the one that is supposed to execute these laws, and the president is trying to stop a lot of fraud, a lot of wasteful spending, a lot of spending on things that are immoral and wrong, all of this gender craziness where we've turned mental illnesses into genders now, where we're allowing for the mutilation of children. And the president's trying to stop all this nonsense. He was elected to stop all this nonsense. I was thinking last night about the fact that, you know, when I go out and give speeches now, I'll rattle off a ton of the things that President Trump has already done in just a few weeks. And when I rattle off these things, everything from flying these thugs out of the country to saying there's one male and female and we're not going to play this game anymore of calling mental illnesses genders, and that one, it gets more applause than anything else. I'm telling you, people go, they go crazy because they're sick of the insanity. And so for President Trump to now be thwarted by these district judges from restoring basic sanity, most of which was implemented by executive order. So where were these judges when Joe Biden was implementing executive orders to do so much of these things? Donald Trump comes along and reverses it through executive order, and now they say he doesn't have the authority to reverse what a previous president was doing? I mean, my goodness, Calvin Coolidge did this thousands of times with executive orders, and he's the most constitutional president maybe in history, other than George Washington, who, of course, was presiding over the Constitutional Convention. All right, quick break. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Phone number is 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. If you got something to weigh in on in our final segment today, I'll be back in a moment. You're listening to At the Core.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Waldman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach. Thanks for staying with me. We're talking about all these judges trying to stop President Trump and a couple of the other examples. We're not going to throw all of them out there, but just to show you the absurdity of this. Think about this one. This Ana Reyes, district court judge in D.C., blocked an executive order banning transgender individuals from serving in the U.S. military, ruling that it likely violates those troops' constitutional rights. Wait, what? Can somebody please show me the clause, the transgender clause? Where is the mental illness clause in the Constitution that says you have a constitutional right to serve in our military even though you're so incapable of serving that you don't know what your own biological organs are? That's a person we want in the military? Are you kidding? That's a person we're going to put in the stress of combat? You're going to put somebody, not only, I mean, even if they weren't in the barracks, so you got a girl in the barracks with other guys, or you got a guy in the barracks with other girls, or in the trench, or whatever it might be. Not only are you going to create that situation, but you're going to put somebody in there that literally 15 minutes ago, every medical journal in the world said had a mental illness. Something's not firing right in their brain. And you're going to put that, you're going to give them a bunch of weapons? And you're going to put them in the stress of a combat situation where, I mean, other people that we didn't have any mental illness history on have gone crazy in that situation and killed our own troops. In other words, turned on our own troops just because they went nuts in the middle of a combat situation. So I think the military has a responsibility to do the best they can to make sure that you can handle the stress factor if you get put in that situation. Doesn't mean you're going to nail it every time, but if there are certain things that clearly show the possibility of someone not being able to handle the situation, of course you should say no. Well, who's in charge of the military? Who is the chief executive of the military? Who is the commander-in-chief? Specifically named that in the Constitution. It is not U.S. District Judge Anna Reyes in Washington, D.C. It is not, as much as I love him and think he's the greatest justice maybe in history, but certainly of our lifetimes, it is not Clarence Thomas. It is certainly not John Roberts. It is Donald Trump. Donald Trump has the final say on how our military recruits, on who our military lets in, how our military is going to be organized. Donald Trump is the one that is the commander-in-chief. Now, does Congress absolutely have some say in how we organize and how much money is going to be spent and all those things? Yes, absolutely. Article 1, Section 8 has all kinds of language in there giving Congress all kinds of say over how the military is going to be organized, when they're going to be called up, how much money is going to be spent. But at the end of the day, who is in charge of the daily operations? Who is in charge of actually deciding who gets in and who doesn't get in? It should be the President of the United States. And for this judge to think they have any say, I can understand Congress arguing with the president over this. That they have some shared authority in the Constitution. But the courts have zero say. Zero. Zilch. Zip. Nada. None. No voice whatsoever. This judge should be impeached as well. The idea that you would tell the President of the United States that they cannot make the decision on the readiness of our military over mental illnesses is insane, folks. This is beyond the pale. Another judge that should be impeached, Anna Reyes in Washington, D.C. I feel like, what was that guy's name? Traffican? There was a congressman 20 years ago, 25, 30 years ago, who used to get on the floor of Congress. He was a Democrat. He used to get on the floor of the Congress, and he would rattle off all this insane thing, these insane things we were doing, and he'd say, beam me up. Remember, beam me up, Scotty? Come on. This is a Star Trek moment. I feel like I'm on a strange planet somewhere with a bunch of crazy people, and I'm begging Scotty to please set the tractor beam, whatever thing it was called, and beam me up and get me back on the Starship Enterprise, because I'd much rather be there than in crazy land here. Okay, wait. There were a couple other ones I was going to point out. Let's see. Some of these examples, a lot of these are spending examples. And the weird thing to me about that is, okay, you're going to make the president cut these checks, which means once the money's spent, you're not getting it back. So if the president's saying, I found some corruption here, or I found, not just waste, I mean, literally fraud, right? There's some corruption or there's some fraud or this money was never actually appropriated for Congress for this particular purpose. And these agencies have distorted this thing and I'm going to step in and I'm not going to spend that money. Well, you know what, if you want to say it's debatable and that Congress has a disagreement with that and they want to fight the president on that, okay, fine. Hold the money. Don't spend the money. How does a federal district judge at the lowest level of the judiciary have the authority to say, I'm going to make you write those checks, which means we will never be able to get the money back, and therefore I am deciding for you what needs to be done, rather than saying, okay, just hold on to the money, and then let's duke it out in court. And you and the Congress can fight out whether or not, you know, this money should actually be spent, whether or not this agency, perfect example is this USAID where all this corruption has been found, whether or not they have been doing what Congress actually told them to do and a president signed on to that law for them to do that. I hope that makes sense. I know I'm ranting here, but the idea that a single district, lowest level of the judiciary judge could make the president of the United States cut checks and send billions of dollars to other countries, by the way, or to NGOs in other countries. It's not like it's even next door where we might could hold somebody accountable at some point. No, we're going to send this money. It will never be recovered. So it's just more money down the drain, or potentially even empowering our enemies, or potentially empowering people to undermine the United States. And these district judges are making the president do that in situation after situation after situation. That's actually the opposite of Joe Biden thumbing his nose at the court, who said you cannot forgive these student loans, because that's not forgiveness of loans. That's actually payment of those loans by other taxpayers. So in other words, the court said to the president, you cannot steal from the American people and take that money and pay off these kids' loans that were studying lesbian dance theory or whatever they were studying. You don't get to do that. Congress has to do that. And if Congress decides that they want to steal from the American people, they have a constitutional power to steal from the American people and give it to another American. That's unfortunately just how it works. But the president doesn't. The president doesn't get to make that up on his own. He doesn't get to make up a law to go spend a bunch of money that Congress never appropriated. And so it's the opposite of what Trump's doing. Trump's trying to not spend money because he doesn't think Congress appropriated it for that purpose. Joe Biden, even though the Supreme Court of the United States told him twice not to do it, he went and spent money that Congress did not give him the authority to spend. So it's apples and oranges, but yet these judges would have defended, these district-level judges would have never stopped Joe Biden from doing the unconstitutional action, but yet they're going to stop President Trump from doing a constitutional action. I feel like I'm running in circles here because it's that crazy. It's just that insane out there. All right, let's go to the phones. 888-589-8840 is the phone number, 888-589-8840. Let's see, we got Michael in Mississippi. Go ahead, Michael. You're up first, man. Go ahead.
I'm not understanding how these lowercase federal judges have any pull and why our people are listening to them if they've got no say-so over what the president does.
I'm just as confused as you, man.
For them.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes... I'll tell you why. Actually, I'll tell you why. It doesn't make sense, but we have bought the lie. We've bought the lie that some dude in a black robe is somehow holier than thou, and that they have that they're somehow have pure intent, and that somehow they are not biased, and that somehow they have been authorized by the Constitution to keep anybody from doing anything bad. That is so warped. First of all, it denies human nature. That judge has biases just like everybody else, but it also denies the actual constitutional authority of the court. And so, Michael, I think I'll tell you the answer. The answer is bad education for decades and decades and decades. So now we have an uneducated populace. We have a media that goes along with this judicial supremacy whenever it favors their cause and what they're for. And we have, unfortunately, most public servants don't know the history on this, and they don't know the constitutional jurisdictions of the court versus the president versus the legislature. And so they're just following along with it. That's why everybody's listening to these district level judges. And frankly, for too long, we allowed it to happen. Even at the Supreme Court level, we allowed this judicial supremacy. We allowed for unelected, unaccountable lawyers to make law for America. That is not how the Constitution is written. That's not how it's designed. That's not how the Founder Fathers intended it. But we've allowed it to happen for decades and decades and decades. So the American people have bought into it. So when a judge rules, they actually think that a judge's, let's not forget what it says at the top, opinion, that a judge's opinion is the final say and has all of this power that it was never intended to have, meaning it should not have the final say. It should not be the end of the argument. And in many cases, it's just an opinion, and it doesn't even have the force of law. But we've just bought it for so long, and I got to tell you, Michael, I don't think we're going to change that mindset overnight. I think that as part of why at Patriot Academy we do all these Constitution classes, and we're trying to educate as much of the American people as we can, and we're also trying to influence education systems around the country in terms of public, private, homeschooling, putting out good curriculum, bringing back a good education on civics so this doesn't happen again. But I will say, I'm not just reaching here for a silver lining. I think the extreme far left craziness of these decisions is going to help. I think it's actually going to make people have the same response you just had, Michael. I think it's going to make people go, wait, what? Why are we doing this? Why are we letting a district judge that nobody's ever heard of, that nobody voted for, why are we letting them overrule the president of the United States, who everybody's heard of and well over half the country voted for? It's making people think about this, which makes them curious and hopefully makes them take a Constitution class from Patriot Academy. And then they get an understanding of this, and then they stand up and say no. And so the more people that get educated on this and the more people that understand this, the more likely President Trump will have the political oomph, the political strength to say no. And the more likely that the Supreme Court will rule in the right way, because they're not as unbiased as people think they are. They're not as in a cocoon as people think they are. They do tend to watch public sentiment, and they do get influenced by that. Roe v. Wade would have never happened if it hadn't been for the public manipulation and outcry and threats and all of the things that they were doing, that the left was doing, to try to get abortion legalized in this country. They couldn't get enough to get the Congress to do it or to get the elected representatives of the country to do it, but they were able to get these judges to cave and do it. So anyway, Michael, that's a way long answer to your question, but bottom line is we have to have better education, and maybe the insanity of these decisions will help with that. It'll speed up that education. It'll accelerate our desire for truth in these situations. Okay, let's head to Illinois. Tom, up in Illinois, you're up next. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, hi, Rick. Good afternoon. I feel your outrage. But we talk about public opinion. I believe President Trump was elected by a majority, and I believe even some of the liberal judges have come out and been shocked by the actions of these activist judges that are doing this.
Yeah.
And to answer your question, why are we letting this happen? Because it can. They're doing it because they can. There's nobody standing up, and that's where the conversation should go. We've got a majority in the House, majority in the Senate, and every single representative should be outraged and should be speaking out about this. And then at that point, President Trump can just do what is legal and constitutional and just ignore these judges. I don't understand why that is not the path to getting by this. This is so frustrating what's going on here. And it just for me, it makes me give up on our entire political system, which is rigged. And I just feel like they're just actors playing a part. I know you're in a bad position there because you got a lot of friends in Congress or whatever.
No, dude, believe me, I insult my friends as much as I do my enemies. If they're on the wrong side, man, I have no problem calling them out. I do it all the time.
Why aren't they speaking out? With a few exceptions, I hear very little.
Well, first of all, because there are even though you have 218 Republicans in the House and 53 Republicans in the Senate, you only have a handful of constitutionalists and actually courageous, what I would call patriots, not politicians. That's why you don't hear more of them speaking out. But two things before I run out of time here to what you said. Number one, you're 100% right, and you sound exactly like my friend Steve Dace, who says we're not a nation of laws, we're a nation of will. So it's who has the will to push through what is right here, and especially when the other side has broken the social compact and is not following the law and following the Constitution. So we have to do exactly what you're saying. 100% agree with that, and it can be done. But the second thing, and I'll close with this, is don't give up. Don't give up, Tom. Don't step out, because we're making huge progress. This is not a new battle. The things that I have said today about the judiciary, I have said for quite literally decades, and we are finally at a place where we can win. Finally at a place where we can take ground back. So don't give up, Tom. We're winning, but it's going to take time. Dig in. All right, thanks for listening, folks. You've been listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. According to a recent study of hundreds of post-abortive women, 60% reported that they would have preferred to give birth if they just received more support from others or had more financial security. That's where Preborn steps in. Preborn is there for women in their darkest hour, deciding between the life and death of their precious child. The reality is women are being pressured to make this fatal decision. And they're being told that their babies are just a clump of cells. Preborn welcomes women with God's love and introduces them to the beautiful life growing inside of them. That doubles their baby's chance at life. When you support Preborn, you're not only supporting women, you empower them. Your donation of $28 will help a woman to make a choice that she won't have to regret for the rest of her life. It'll give her the ultimate blessing, life. Your love can save a life. Just dial #250 and say the word baby. That's #250, baby. Or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.